From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, who's behind the secret door? For the rest of the show, then, we'll have three guests. I have no idea who they are. I have to guess who they are. Some of them doctor their own voices. That'll be fun. We'll see what happens. Here's what's happening. Hurricane Matthew closing in on Florida as a very powerful Category 4 storm, as the governor there is urging people up and down the state's 580-mile Atlantic coastline to brace themselves for devastating impacts. He says the storm is a monster. Matthew is likely to produce devastating impacts along the portions of the East Coast tonight. So far, it has killed 284 people in Haiti. Now, by Thursday night, more than 60,000 homes and businesses have been without power. Streets in Vero Beach were partially covered with water, and hotel guests in Orlando were told to stay inside, though a few sneaked outside just to feel what was going on. Climatologist Dr. Tim Ball with us. Tim, it's been a long time since we had one of these coming around.
Well, George, today is the 4,000th day since they last had a hurricane come ashore in the United States. So it's a significant day in that sense. And, of course, that's part of why, in my opinion, they're making an awful lot about this storm. The difficulty is that the categories that they assign to it are simply taken by aircraft at altitude and then by a computer model calculated to surface wind speeds. Almost always they overestimate the wind speed. The bigger problem with this storm, of course, is the fact that it's tracking along the coast and will bring onshore winds and with the high tides, flooding, which is of course what always causes most of the loss of life, like Katrina and so on. But the other thing is, as it moves north, it comes under the influence of the rotation of the Earth more and will move away to the northeast. That's the normal track of these things. And there's two things I think people should look at, is the incredible number of different tracks the computer models came up with, which tells you the models aren't very good. And the other thing is that people should start asking questions about why aren't the power supplies protected underground, for example, and all sorts of other things. Much more security needed in the power supply. So those are some of the things that are going on, and an awful lot of hype about it.
Tim, how long does it take this kind of a hurricane to dissipate once it starts trickling inland?
Well, once it moves over the land, it dissipates very, very quickly. The source of the energy for the hurricane is the water evaporating off the ocean, and it takes heat energy from the ocean to do that. When that water gets or gas gets into the atmosphere and it condenses, the heat is released, and that's what fuels the hurricane. A moderate-sized hurricane like the one you're looking at, you've got about 2 billion gallons of water an hour being evaporated off of the surface of the ocean. But once that moves over land, of course, that's like just squeezing the fuel line in your car. It just cuts off all the energy. And you can look at the tracks of the hurricanes. They really don't get past the Appalachian Mountains or very far inland. But as I say, what's interesting about this one is the fact that it's tracking along the coast. Now, there's a reason for that, and that is, of course, that the cold air that's been pushing down in central North America is also keeping it off the coast. So those factors are combining. But it's the source of energy is removed once it moves over the land.
Tim, try to make yourself available for us tomorrow night, okay?
I will be here.
Dr. Tim Ball. Iran's elite Revolutionary Guards warning the regional rival Saudi Arabia to stay away from Iranian waters during Saudi Arabia's military exercises. Anything could happen with those kinds of threats. The Russian government is ratcheting up warnings on Twitter to us, the United States, not to interfere with its military operations in Syria, even suggesting that American aircraft could be targeted by its air defense systems, which they just installed in Syria. In a very provocative tweet, the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C., posted a side-by-side photo of White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest and the Russian S-300 missile system that they installed. Now, with the military apparatus pointed toward the image of Josh, a caption says Russia wants the system because they never really know what kind of assistance terrorists might get. The tweet says Russia will take every defensive measure necessary to protect their personnel in Syria. Dr. Jerome Corsi, who writes for WND.com. Jerry, why is the tension so high out there? What's happening?
Well, George, I'm looking at the tweet right now, and it's pretty remarkable. I mean, it's hard to say. Secretary Kerry said we were discontinuing talks with Russia, and then talks evidently got continued. Russia's sending a very clear message that Russia is going to bomb and have massive military force to defeat ISIS in Aleppo and other parts of Syria in order to make sure Assad stays in power. And I think Russia right now feels that the Obama administration is going to do nothing, that, you know, with the election on and the tensions of the election, and President Obama clearly does not want to go to an expanded war. We've been at war really almost throughout the Obama administration in the Middle East. And I don't think there's any appetite in the United States for an expanded war or a war with Russia. And Russia knows it and is taking full advantage of our unwillingness to confront the Russians as a opportunity to expand Russian power in the Middle East.
And Jerry, what about that story about the Iranian elite Revolutionary Guards threatening Saudi Arabia?
Well, and again, you've got a very complex situation where Iran was expanding the whole Shiite power within the Middle East, including in Iraq, where Iran is playing a major role today. And Iran wants to boost the Assad regime and is really cooperating with Russia in the effort to keep Assad in power. So you've got a situation where the United States is really in a corner. We're pushing to backing ISIS, which, you know, there'd be no appetite in the United States for backing ISIS. And there's pretty good evidence that we supplied weapons to ISIS, even out of Libya with Secretary Clinton. And it's very controversial. I mean, this entire subject is extremely controversial. I think the Obama administration would like it all to subside until after the election. But Russia is taking advantage of it and ramping up the rhetoric and also ramping up the military force within Syria, I think, to make sure the Assad regime survives.
Okay, Jerry, thank you so much. How many years have I been talking about creepy clowns? Clowns I don't like. I've been doing that since I've been running Coast to Coast. And now it's really gotten out of hand. A creepy clown intimidated people on a subway in Manhattan in New York, chasing a teenager out of a train station. The 16-year-old boy was getting off of a subway train at the 96th Street station on Lexington Avenue when he encountered the man in a clown mask. The clown was standing in the doorway of the train, preventing people from exiting. Moments later, the clown started chasing the teenager, who ran through a turnstile and up a flight of stairs. When he turned around, he saw the clown at the turnstile holding a kitchen knife. Police are looking for that clown. Professional clowns are getting fed up with the recent reports of frightening incidents all around the country that has put many communities, of course, on high alert and tarnished the image of these performers. The clown community in Tucson, Arizona has organized a Clown Lives Matter march that's set to take place October 15th in reaction to the reports of killer clowns terrorizing communities and the rumors on social media fanning the fears of clown attacks. The Rolling Stones, they have confirmed they will release a new album of blues covers in December. Blue and Lonesome was recorded over just 3 days in London earlier this year and features new versions of songs by Howlin' Wolf and Jimmy Reed. By the way, guitarist Eric Clapton also features on the record, having dropped in on a few sessions while he was recording his own album in a studio next door. The Rolling Stones have not released a studio album since the 2005 era. Isn't that amazing? Levels of beneficial omega-3 fish oils in farmed salmon have apparently fallen significantly in the past 5 years, according to a study. The BBC News has learned that on average, the levels of the omega-3s halved in fish over that period. Despite this, the analysis shows that farmed salmon is still one of the richest sources of these fatty acids. I would rather supplement myself. Two police officers killed over the past 24 hours plus. In Los Angeles County, a police sergeant shot and killed. The 29-year-old who shot him has been captured. In Missouri, St. Louis County officer shot and killed today by an 18-year-old youth who was shot and wounded by police. Out of hand. The teenager fatally shot by police in southern Los Angeles over the weekend left a farewell note to his family before the encounter and appears to have wanted to end his own life. 16 years old. Died after a confrontation with officers. Police said he was holding an item disguised to look like a gun. The orange tip of the item had been painted black to resemble an actual handgun. And it's happening way too often. As a matter of fact, teenage suicides is a growing health concern. It is the third leading cause of death for young people ages 15 to 24, surpassed only by homicide and accidents, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Up next, we will be talking to a psychic medium. What happens the day after? Messages from adolescent suicides. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We are going to deal with a very dark subject this hour, but it's a very important subject. Teresa St. Francis is an internationally renowned psychic medium and gifted animal psychic. Now, for more than 35 years, she has worked solely by word of mouth and referrals, supporting people in healing grief, emotional turmoil, trauma, resulting in an understanding and deep peace. Clients in her private practice, as well as attendees at open forum audience readings, receive and confirm the astounding direct messages that she picks up. And we're going to talk about her latest work, which calls What Happens the Day After? Messages from Adolescent Suicides. What a very difficult subject, Teresa, but you handled it, I think, extremely well. Thank you for that, and welcome to the show.
George, thank you for having me. It is a passion that I have dealt with for a very long time, is dealing with these adolescent suicides who have taken their life and have chosen to come back and tell me their stories in order to save lives.
I mean, I just had a story of a 16-year-old who, you know, went after police. He got shot, but he wanted to die. I mean, this was his mission. What's going on with these young people, Teresa?
These young adolescents are having a lot of issues. I think one of the major issues that I see and I've written in the book about is not having the ability to have lifestyle coping skills, and those coping skills are starting to show up when they're in stressful situations. And I also believe, based on all the discussions I've had with those who have taken their life, they didn't realize that they could get help, that there was help, as well as one other very big component is they don't realize how devastating depression is. And I use the analogy of cancer. When cancer gets in a body, it really wreaks havoc and winds up being devastating. Depression's no different. It's like a cancer. It goes through your body and it starts to own you. And these young adolescents do not realize how devastating depression can be and the grip that it has on your life and the incapacitation to functioning on a daily basis.
What is social media doing to these young people as well?
Oh, that is such a great question, and thank you for asking that. Social media, from what I've experienced in speaking to these young adolescents who have passed over, has caused them not to have the ability to communicate as well as deal with social skills, as well as lifestyle skills, because they're so busy being focused on their devices, their handheld devices. Gotcha. I was driving in the car today, and I saw a young woman cross the street, and she had on her big headset, you know, big ear stuff, and it was attached to a phone. She was not paying attention to even the crosswalk. She crossed right in front of me, and I almost hit her. And I see that more and more often, and I think that's part of, and I hate to say it, but I think it's part of the brainwashing that these kids don't have the ability to pay attention to their own inner voice as well as have experiences outside of their own phone.
I was driving on the notorious 405 here in Los Angeles today, and there was a guy next to me, not a teenager, but a guy next to me texting away, was not even looking at the traffic that was stopped on the freeway in front of him, and I had to honk at him, Teresa, to get his attention, or he would have rear-ended somebody and probably would have killed himself and them.
It's becoming an epidemic issue. That's why when in writing the book, I also speak to parents, and there's a lot of different techniques I talk about that the adolescents gave me from the other side that they thought and think should change in the way these children are being brought up, that we need to take the devices away. We need to cause them to socially interact, to let them experience life, even if they stumble and fall. It's a great thing because that's the success of learning about yourself and learning about life. And in my book, I talk in great detail on how we can, as a society, as a family, as a culture, start helping these young adolescents and even youngsters as young as 5 and 6 years old start to have the coping skills and experiences to know that they can rely on their own resources.
You're a professional medium. I would assume you did not expect to devote a lot of time, energy, and resources to this subject when you were just starting out as a medium, or did you?
No, not at all. I did not. And over the last couple of years, it has been building and building to the point where they, at night, a lot of people don't know this about me. At night, one of my jobs is to help those spirits who are lost. So I don't get a lot of nighttime sleep. And subsequently from that, there were a lot more adolescents showing up at my house talking to me. And Michelle, who's one of the main spiritual liaisons, her mom came to me for several readings, and she decided that in order to help make her life contract, fulfill her life contract, she was going to be my spiritual liaison to all these other adolescent suicide. So she brought them to my house. She brought them to my living room and in my kitchen and in my bedroom. And we would talk night after night. I grabbed my iPhone and we'd have a two-way conversation. I then translated that into text. And from text, it went into the book. And everything got written down because they wanted to share their stories about how they regret taking their life and what they learned before they left this earthly world and what they've learned since they've been in on the other side.
Well, and you just said something I think really important. Most of them regret taking their lives, don't they?
Yes, they absolutely regret taking their lives because they got to see if they had stayed, what really would have transpired, how they would have changed other people's lives, how their life contract and how important they were and are to the universe.
I think every young kid, this should be mandatory, should be forced to watch It's a Wonderful Life, the movie with Jimmy Stewart.
You know, that's a great reference, and I reference that a lot when I lecture. It's a Wonderful Life because it definitely shows if you were not here, what would have transpired if you weren't, and how important you are that you are here. And that gives them eternal hope, and it gives them inspiration to continue even when times are difficult.
Are they doing now, those that have passed on, are they doing what they're doing with you in order to kind of cleanse their own guilt feelings and save some other live young person from doing this?
I wouldn't go so far as characterize it as their own guilt feelings as is telling their stories about why they took their lives, the signs from their deceased loved ones and angels on showing them not to take their life, reasons why. And in the story, Michelle tells me in the book, she tells me of all the things that happened to her days before her passing that were odd. Like, for example, she was in college, and she was a very great athlete, and she was a great softball player. She's on campus, and she's walking through campus, and she's very distraught. And lo and behold, she crosses paths with her high school coach. And this campus is a huge campus.
Mm-hmm. And this is when she was alive.
This is when she's alive, and she was in despair, and she was contemplating suicide. She was putting the plan together.
Hold on right there. We'll talk about this case of Michelle and some others, and we'll take phone calls. We've only got a half hour to go here with Teresa, so we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're dealing with a very difficult, tough subject this hour. What happens the day after? It's about adolescent suicides. Our very special guest, Teresa St. Francis, author of the book, What Happens the Day After. She is a psychic medium as well. We'll be back with her and your phone calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. Give you a quick update on Hurricane Matthew as it creeps up Florida's east coast. So far, the state's relatively lucky because it really hasn't gone inland as much. It's just creeping up the east coast there. 60,000 homes without power, and it's raining cats and dogs on some of those coastal lines. But so far, so good. It hasn't made its big push. It's still a Category 4, though, and it is still treacherously dangerous. Our special guest this hour, Teresa St. Francis, her book, What Happens the Day After. She is a psychic medium, and she is specializing right now on adolescent suicides. Tell us about the story now of Michelle, who was very key to you when you were doing this work.
She was my spiritual liaison, and there were so many messages that she delivered to me for the book to help people who are still here. And one of the messages that she talks about in the book, as well as all the other adolescents, is the amount of signs that they got from their guardian angels and their deceased loved ones that they overlooked. And one of them was that she met her high school coach on campus 2 days before she was going to pass, and they had a really good relationship. Spirit put that individual in her path to kind of awaken her to say, hey, look, talk to this person. They will help you. And there were many other signs that all of them talk about prior to their passing that would, if they understood the signs and understood what Spirit was trying to say to them, they would have stopped and reconsidered their decision.
When you were doing this kind of work, was there anything that really got to you, Teresa, that kind of broke you up?
Oh, the whole book broke me up. I wrote day in and day out. It was so consuming for me all through the holidays that there were days I couldn't tell you if it was night or day. I couldn't tell you if I was writing for 12 hours or I had written for 3 days.
Okay, we're going to take some calls here with you with the time remaining. Let's go to Ryan in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Hey, Ryan. Hi there.
How are you, George?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Well, you know, I'm a teenager, and I know a few friends of mine. Like, you know, they've gone through some personal things, and I've seen the signs. But I'm grateful for them that they didn't make that decision and, you know, stay alive.
What pushed them to that point?
I don't know. To me, what they talked about is that they're getting hope, and you know, they were talking. They talked about and they confided their feelings into, like, people that kind of knew them the best, and, you know, they're the ones who gave them the advice.
Yourself included. I bet you helped them a lot, Ryan.
Yes, I did. I just listened to them.
Well, I think, Ryan, that's a really key point.
I'm going through personal stuff myself, you know.
Sure.
There are times I feel like that, but I just realized that if I do that, I'm making the wrong decision, and ultimately it just makes it a bad decision.
And Ryan, I want to thank you for helping your friends. That's why I wrote the book. And Jenny McCarthy wrote my foreword, and she writes, it's a positively riveting book filled with eternal hope and living inspiration for parents, teachers, and kids. So this book is for everybody. So I want to get it out even to the young adolescents, the teenagers, so that they do have a resource to go to understand. Not only is there physical help, there's spiritual help, that you have a spiritual tag team, teachers, angels, and guides. And they're a resource for us to give us the help that we need. And they do put people in our lives to help us. So thank you for being a living angel.
You know, Teresa, we're all human beings. We are all subject to these ups and downs in life. What is it that allows some of us to pick up and keep going, even though we have rough times, and others just can't handle it?
You know, that's a really great question, and I think it's a very complex answer. And I think the reason a lot of people get up and continue is because they have a more spiritual understanding of their life contract. And I write in the book, why you're here. These adolescents answer the questions, why we're here, what's our purpose, what would life be like if I didn't come? I got to see what my life was like in the Akasha records. I got to choose my family. I get to choose where I live. Why did I make the choices that I made? And I think that all comes down to what's written in the book of how we can help these adolescents have a bigger perspective of how important and beautiful they are as individuals.
Now, I have always thought that if people committed suicide, that they would be damned to hell. I don't think that's the case, but that's what I used to hear. What's the story here?
When you pass from a suicide, you get to go into to heaven. You get to live in heaven, but you don't get to rest in peace. You have to actually reconstruct your life contract as if you were still alive. And everything that you were responsible for, if you were still here, still has to be done. So a great example of that is if you were clandestine to write new law about bullying or clandestine to write new law about depression, and you took your own life before you were able to fulfill your life contract, nobody gets to substitute in for that. So that is a big void in the universe. And I think a lot of adolescents, when they read this book and when they hear these stories, they'll start to realize that they really have importance. They are needed here.
You say that parents that seem to push their kids after they've had these tendencies to go back to school, go back to college, make a big mistake. And what is that big mistake?
That big mistake is not understanding the child's or adolescent's needs and really understanding the authenticity of each individual. Not every child is destined to go to school. We need people who are carpenters and plumbers and caretakers. We don't need everybody going to school because that's how the identifier is. And I write in the profile in the chapter, Life Through a Kaleidoscope, I write in there about the high-risk children, and I put down profiles of these are the children who are the most at high risk and what we can do to take them out of the high-risk category so that they can see themselves in the beauty of who they are, not based on a grade or based on their performance in a sport or on a field.
Teresa, is your book a warning guide for parents and children? What exactly is it?
It's an according to the great reviews I've had on Amazon.com, parents have said it's made them better parents. It's made them have a different look on how they're going to raise their children. It's going to cause them to have more interaction, to have time spent with them, to ask more tougher questions, to participate in their life in a different way so that they can give their children better life skills.
Next up, we go to Lance in Abilene, Texas, east of the Rockies. Hi, Lance. Thank you. go ahead.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Lance.
To work as a half-trance medium years ago in the early 80s, and I created some tests for myself. I was mostly involved with what I thought were spirit guides. And eventually my stepfather, I felt, was communicating to me, this time not through half-trance, but through a dream. And so I thought, is this really my stepdad? So I asked him a question that I would not know the answer to. I asked him what his Social Security number was, and he gave me a number. I couldn't remember exactly what the number was when I woke up, but when I checked with my mom, I could tell that the numbers weren't a match. Then when it happened again a second time, I asked him for his mother's maiden name, which I didn't know. He gave me a name, and that didn't match either. So I realized that this was something that I was creating from within myself.
I gave up doing
the trance work. Now, when you work with a spiritual guide like Michelle, do you ever offer a test like, what's your middle name or what was your address? Or, you know, you were talking about the Akashic Records, which is a record of everything. Can Michelle ever help you find like a milk carton kid, someone that's been kidnapped, or a teen that is on the brink of committing suicide, whether there could be an intervention?
And that's a really great question, Lance, and I thank you for asking it. The validation from Michelle was actually giving the information to her mother that only things that Michelle would have and her mother would have known. Like, example is Michelle told me in our first reading with her mom's name was Angela, that she had a birthmark on her butt, and it was in a specific shape. And I told that to Angela in the reading, and Angela starts crying. She's like, nobody ever knew that but me and her.
Tell us the story about John, the young man in the military.
Young man in the military, broke my heart. Actually, he lives two towns over from where I and I've been become very friendly with his mom because she's been here many times for readings. He was a very well-adjusted young man. He was very intelligent, extremely smart, didn't apply himself in school, got okay grades, never really found his sort of stride until he got into the Navy, and then he found friends, and he found a girlfriend, and he actually was having a life that he was enjoying. But what had happened was he actually got put down by his girlfriend in front of his friends, and he got overwhelmed, and he didn't have the life skills to deal with depression, and he was dealing with depression and didn't even realize it. He was also dealing with actually a breakup. He had never had a breakup from a girlfriend before. So all these pressures and not having the ability to cope, because in the book, he tells me in the book, and it's validated through his mom, that John never dealt with anything difficult. It was difficult, and he couldn't be a perfectionist and succeed at doing it and doing it 100%. He wouldn't do it at all. So being in the Navy, this was a whole new experience for him. So when he got rejected by his girlfriend, he couldn't handle the job. He was also on a lot of those, I'll call them energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually started not thinking correctly. So at the time when he took his life, everything had come crashing down.
Sad.
He hadn't slept for 46 hours.
He was in a bad time.
Really bad time. Really bad place. And didn't know to ask for help, because he wasn't the type of person to ask for help, because he never needed help. He never put himself in situations where he needed to ask for help. And that's some of the things I talk about in the book, is letting parents let their children ask for help. Let them fail. The greatest achievement a parent can do for their child is to let them fail, because through failure, the children get to see their own inner authentic self and the tools and gifts that the Creator gave all of us to deal with life. And that dealing with life is exactly how we're going to handle our adult life.
How many young people do you think you have dealt with from the other side?
You know, that's, George, that's a really good question. And I would probably just say, quite honestly, at least 10,000.
Wow. How many of them have been on pharmaceutical drugs when they were living? Did they say that?
I think some of them have, some of them haven't. I think the epidemic, from what I've been told from Spirit, is really in the last 20 years, you're starting to see the epidemic of adolescent suicide because of the pressure of society, the pressures of family, to have their children succeed, to go to the best colleges, to go to the best schools, to be the number one performer on the field, to be the captain, to always get straight A's. And every year, the numbers that come out from Harvard and Yale and all the studies that they're doing, it's increasing exponentially from year to year, that these young adolescents are taking their own life, not only from a college level, but also from a high school level, because of bullying and because of peer pressure and not fitting in. And we have a whole society that drives that in the wrong direction. Look at models, and you have to be a size 3. The whole world doesn't live in size 3. And I think that's part of what we need to teach our children, that just because it's on TV or it's on the Internet or it's in Twitter or Facebook, what they're telling you is not always the truth.
Teresa, are schools doing a good job trying to reach these children who are unstable, who are on the edge, who are depressed? Are they doing anything there? Do they have anybody in the school systems that recognize this, deal with it instantly? I don't think we had it in my day.
Oh, I know I didn't have it in my day either, but I do know I live in the Northeast, and I do have a lot of teachers as clients, and I do know every year before they start school, they go through a 3 to 5 day course on suicide prevention, on what the things they're sort of to look for, what are the cues, the dialogue that they need to have with these young adolescents. And I know in college, when I went to school, there was no department of suicide prevention or a mental health clinic. And almost every college today has that. So I think they are addressing it. Some places do a better job of it than others. I think we as a society need to address it as a whole and need to stop sweeping it under the carpet. And I know it's very hard for families who have children who commit suicide. They don't want that stigma.
God.
They don't want that to be viewed like that. But that's part of what I think it's why it's growing, is because we're not giving enough attention to the truth about my child committed suicide. I want to tell the story so that we can stop another child from doing it.
Do many of these young people think, as bad as things are, that one day it'll be fine?
Yes, a lot of them believe if they leave this planet, all their pain and their suffering will end, and they'll get to live in heaven. What they don't realize until they get to the other side, and we talk in great detail about that in the book, is when you get to the other side, it's not rest in peace. It's not the beauty of heaven. They have to go to work. And their work is to make sure their life contract and the master plan is still in effect. And I write that, and there's chapters in the book that explain what a life contract is, what a master plan is, how all of it's interfaced, intertwined with each one of us. No man is an island. We are all responsible to help each other, because we are either teachers teaching somebody something about life, because we all have experiences to share, or we are students learning something from somebody else who has more wisdom or knowledge. That's why we're all here, is to help each other.
Our first-time caller, Linda in Inglewood, California. Hey, Linda. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi,
Linda.
I'm wondering about the accidental suicides.
That's a really good
question. Contact you?
You know, I'm not of the belief, Shuster, that there's accidental suicides. When I talk to these young adolescents who have passed over, there are real issues that go on that they have to deal with, whether it's anxiety, depression, family issues, financial issues, peer pressure issues, religious issues, and I cover a lot of that in the book. I think we as outsiders sometimes think it's accidental, but when I really talk to them, they have a better awareness that they were walking down that journey.
With just a minute and a half left, where can people get your book, Teresa, and how do they get a hold of you?
They can get my book on whathappenstodayafter.com. They can go to my website, which is teresacommunicates.com, and they can join my email list. I'm also running a promotion for join my email list and be entered into a raffle for a free reading. I'm also giving away books. I am in the process of putting together a lecture tour, as well as if you're on the East Coast, I have an event coming up on October 28th, which I do public readings as an open forum gallery. So there's many ways for people to get in touch with me. You can call me at my office, which is 201-475-1044, but definitely go to teresacommunicates.com or my other website, which is What Happens the Day After. Also, you can buy my book on Amazon.com and read the fabulous 5-star reviews.
All right, and they are indeed. Hey, you take care of yourself. Keep in touch with us, okay?
I will, George, and thank you so much for helping me spread the message that each child and each adolescent is extremely important, and we need to save lives, and their lives matter.
Absolutely. And the book, again, is called What Happens the Day After. Up next, 3 hours of Who's Behind the Secret Door. I have no idea who our guests are. I've got to try to guess. I had a pretty good hit rate so far, but we'll see what happens. And what we're going to do is at the half-hour mark at each guest, we're going to open up the phone lines with you.